I just want to make a couple clarifications about our criteria on usability. And NQF really does make a distinction between endorsing a measure versus how the measure ultimately is implemented and displayed, because measures can be used by a variety of implementers, and how they display the information at this point in time is not part of the NQF endorsement. So I just wanted to mention that, and actually NQF has a current task force looking at the usability criterion. And, you know, if there, and I think this has been alluded to already, but there, how measures are explained is something that is easily correctable by experts in how to communicate performance data to consumers if that's an issue. So we do not require that they've done some testing. If they have done some testing with consumers, that's fine to provide. But we do make a distinction of endorsing the measure and ultimately how it might get displayed on a website or in a report. The other thing about quality improvement that I'll just mention is that the criteria is about facilitating quality improvement. And so this specific issue came up when the CSAC and task forces were looking at our criteria and specifically about outcome measures because it often is questioned about how is an outcome measure helpful for quality improvement. Basically, we talk about facilitating quality improvement, which means if you have data on performance on outcome measures, whether it's this measure or some other outcome measure, and have information that your hospital is doing more poorly than another hospital, that in and of itself, that information identifies that it's an area for your hospital to pursue, to look at what are the issues in your hospital. An outcome measure will never tell you exactly what you need to do, but it should tell you where you have areas to pursue opportunities for improvement. So I just want to make those clarifications based on what our criteria actually are at this point.
I echo Michael's comments, and I do want to say this issue of timing is very important because hospitals are not in the position where they can understand these rates across all readmissions. They can only see their own, and it makes it very, very difficult to do a rapid cycle test of change when the data are 2 years old. The second point, I don't know where this fits, but I would like to see somehow us think through unintended consequences. And perhaps as part of usability, try to elicit whether or not those are happening. Like, if all we do by decreasing readmissions is increase the number of observation stays of 23 hours and returns to the ED through a revolving door, that's not very patient-centered care. So I'd love to somehow work that in. I don't know how we can do that.
Perhaps not.
Laura?
I think that there's been a lot of discussion about hierarchical modeling today, and Ashish, you made a point again about usability with regards to hierarchical versus non-hierarchical, and I just wanted to say that I think because this is an all-cause readmission where you're kind of holding in all the patient populations into one model versus looking specifically at specific cohorts like AMI, pneumonia, I don't think that the shrinkage is going to give you that much of a bias here. I mean, certainly we could ask the developer group if they've looked at that in terms of comparing shrinkage versus non-hierarchical modeling, but my gut feeling is that may not be much of an issue here, and so probably wouldn't affect usability as much as it would if we were looking, say, at AMI alone or CHF readmissions alone.
Okay. Frank, and then Jeff, and then I think we're going to call the question.
Yeah, just addressing the idea of usability, I was trying to put myself in the position of using this as a hospital administrator, which is one of the roles I have now, and I agree with Michael about the time lag on this makes this very difficult. So I question the usability around that. I was trying to imagine myself in the role of a consumer of services, which I am too, and I would find it confusing, I think. And in fairness of advertising, I would presume that if we endorse this and it moves forward, it would move forward, I have to presume this, with the list of caveats about what the measure does not measure. So I would have to assume that the consumers would have to be told, we didn't adjust for this, we didn't adjust for that, we didn't adjust for that. These were things that we didn't do because of either burden or complexity. And I have to also assume that consumers would have to be told, in fairness in advertising, and I agree with Karen's point completely, that what we're doing is we're assessing a continuum of care, which includes hospitals, includes the bifrost between hospitals and ambulatory, and also includes ambulatory. And we have to tell people consuming this that although we're talking about that continuum, we're only measuring one part of it. And I'm just trying to imagine at the end of that list of caveats, what would I make of it as a measure of the facility itself? I personally would probably be confused by the time I got to the end of the list. So in terms of usability, I'm just trying to imagine, are we going to include all of those caveats, and what does that do to the audience? That's all.
Taryn, you want to comment on that? It's my understanding that that's outside of the scope of this committee.
Well, then I think the Karen can probably speak to this about as part of the usability task force, but really I think there was strong sentiment that if no matter how complex some of these measures are, that they can be constructed and reported by people who are experts in this area. But Karen, do you have anything else to add?
No, that's true, and Sonia can probably speak to it more than any of us. But the other thing to keep in mind is that we really are, public reporting is just one aspect of accountability, and we're in the process of broadening our thoughts about usability, and it's really public reporting and other ways of accountability. Public reporting is not just directed at consumers. Probably those of you who are providers have looked at public reports, and those of you who are referring to other providers have probably looked at public reports as well. And just in terms of performance improvement, public reporting not only informs consumers or people who are choosing, but also provides some external motivation to improvement activities. So there's, the public reporting piece is complex. NQF really recognizes more than just public reporting in the accountability realm. And public reporting can be targeted at more than just consumers.
Jeff,
and
then let's talk about the
So, as I think about the concept of usability here, it's really, in some, at least one element of that is the impact of the use of this measure. And this, like so many other measures that we see in public reporting, certainly can be used. The question is, to what end? And I'm struggling a little bit with that, A, because an all-cause readmissions piece is extraordinarily blunt. And as a hospital administrator, if I were putting on that hat, given that it's so lumpers, not splitters, in approach, it's very difficult to know what I would use that information for. One, two is that, and that's not a reflection on this group's measure, but the concept in general. Number two is though, I think if I were using this, getting back to the whole SES discussion, I might be in the precarious role of saying as a hospital administrator, well, my patients are different. I have a large Medicare population. I have a large underserved population. I have a population in the middle of North Dakota that doesn't have primary care doctors or all the other issues that we've begun to address. So I'm struggling a little bit with those sort of those paradoxes that we discussed this. From a patient perspective, again, because it's so blunt, as an all-cause readmission process, again, not reflecting the specific measure, but the concept, the usefulness, again, becomes somewhat more limited, and it becomes more of an elevator speech in some ways at the consumer level or something that gets advertised rather than something that's truly useful. So I'm struggling, I really struggle with this. I'm not sure how much of that is a reflection on the metric proposed as a conceptual model of all cause readmissions.
Can I just add just a procedural thought as we sort of move into voting for usability and feasibility, and really thinking through the fact that this question of the criteria is really asking about this measure in particular, about whether or not it's usable and understandable. And starting with the assumption in the first criteria of importance of the measure as the measure was constructed about all-cause hospital readmission, we want to keep in mind what's at hand, which is this measure as specified. So not to necessarily bring in all those larger questions that we really spent a lot of considerable time thinking about at the start of this measure discussion. So, because that would have implications for all the measures going forward.
So going back to usability, looking at some criteria, 3A is meaningful, understandable, and useful for public reporting and accountability, and 3B, meaningful, understandable, and useful for quality improvement. So to what extent was the criteria usability met? You guys can start.
Patricia, are you on the phone still?
I think we're waiting on one more person. If you want to put in your vote again. There we go. And we have
7
to
11
low.
Yeah, 7 moderate and 11 low.
Okay, moving on to our fourth criterion, feasibility. And that the required data is readily available or can be captured without undue burden. So looking at for clinical measures, the clinical data is generated during care process, which could be the blood pressure or lab samples. All data elements are in electronic claims, and if they aren't, a plan for the data elements to get to electronic collection. Susceptibility to inaccuracies and unintended consequences identified, and the ability to audit the data to capture any of these issues. And the last one, data collection strategy can be implemented.
Okay, so do we expect much discussion on this one? Does anybody want to make any comments on this one? Pretty clear where the data comes from, I'm guessing by the expressions around the table.
Just the one follow-up comment I think that Richard made earlier, if the data is collected in that secondary hospital and it's not available to the first hospital, there's a void immediately to know whether you have a problem or not to be addressed. And so from a consumer point of view then, is that measure effective and understandable, and it can it be actionable? If it's not actionable, why that prior the first hospital? Because they don't even know it exists. How is the data available?
Yeah, so I'll try to answer that, but I think the issue is that measure as it's specified now either would or would not pose difficulties in feasibility. Whether that information gets to wherever one thinks it should go, to another hospital, to the consumer, to the, you know, the practitioners, the hospital leadership. I think that was really all wrapped up in the discussion of feasibility. So from a pure feasibility standpoint, the issues of inter-hospital transfer of information are not really, at least if I understand it, are not really germane. It's essentially billing data that's been centrally transmitted. Frankly, CMS hasn't been present. Any other comments?
Can we just try
potential issues. So as currently, as the public reporting, you as a hospital get a full list of every readmission, no matter what hospital they go to. So you are given that information no matter what hospital the patient is. Yeah, we get that.
What you don't get now.
You get whether your patient was readmitted, but not to what hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
know how many of your patients get put into another hospital.
And that's the CMS decision. As I mentioned before, CMS could give you the hospitals to which they're admitted if there's a clamoring for the data.
And I would just, again, clarify that's not a function of the measure. That's a function of data availability. So the idea of creating a measure that wouldn't include readmission to another hospital would be the alternative, and I'm not sure that would really serve the purpose. So as has been stated, that data exists, and certainly hospitals are given what patients are readmitted, and definitely can push for the additional information of identifying the specific hospital, but it's not necessarily a measure property. That's how it's implemented.
Okay, I think, Adila, we can move directly to vote on feasibility, unless anybody has something very pressing to offer.
Okay, so again, we're looking at 4A, data generated during care, 4B, electronic sources, 4C, susceptibility to inaccuracies identified, unintended consequences identified, and 4D, data collection can be implemented. So to what extent was the criteria of feasibility met? If high, medium, high, moderate, low, sufficient? You can start. Online. Oh, a short one person. Can you all do your vote in again, please?
So I'm not interested in reiterating any of the
arguments I made earlier, it seems to me that a bunch of the issues that were raised are essentially empirical questions that if we had better data, we could answer. And I'll just give a few. And these are not even things that we need 6 years of data collection. These are things that potentially the measure or developer could give us relatively quickly. So one thing certainly is, how much does the hierarchical model? So, Lauren, your question, I agree with you. This may not be as much of an issue. Potentially, the data will tell us that. So there are key things that could be done. The second one about whether consumers are more likely to understand on the usability issue, confidence intervals, or if they're more likely to understand hierarchical models with predicted rates based on a series of assumptions, is an empirical issue. I mean, you can decide which is more usable based on surveying people who would use these data and saying which is more transparent and more understandable to you. It seems to me that that my vote on the overall might very well change based on the answers to those questions. And I suspect that there may be other people who might feel differently if the hierarchical model really affects small hospitals in a big way, or if it's trivial and doesn't have much of an impact at all. So I understand we're voting. I'll vote. But I guess it's almost a process question. Is there a way for the measure developers to come back with more information to clarify these issues? Or is that really out of the scope of what we could ask?
Can I ask Terms and Karen to answer the question of, if we do something now, how long are we approving this measure for, and are we going to revisit some of these issues and ask these questions at some point as part of a constant improvement process on your end?
Well, I'll start, Karen. Feel free to jump in. So measures that are evaluated in this process will be reviewed under maintenance in a 3-year cycle to evaluate as one of the measures that you'll consider today by UnitedHealthcare. So there will be an opportunity to revisit the measure and some comments from the field on the implementation of it. The question on hand of whether or not we can ask the measure developers and to further information and then reply, I think I'll sort of leave this to Karen and Alexis. In some ways, this is the first time we're going through an expedited review. As part of the expedited review, we would have liked to have more back and forth with developers, not only for this measure but for others, but for the sake of time, we just didn't have that flexibility. I'm pretty confident that we will not have the flexibility to have the measure developers respond to comments back to the committee because we just don't have that much time in the cycle. There's another comment that I wanted to make, but I think I'll leave it with that. If you have anything to add, Karen?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to have to see where we're at the end of today and see what makes sense for moving forward. Before we, some of these things could probably be answered in a relatively short turnaround. I think we'll have you vote on the measure as it's currently specified. We'll do that for all of the measures. We'll tomorrow maybe we'll end up identifying questions that we want more analysis about and then come back and vote on the measures again. So, we are on a pretty short time frame, but, we'll have to see where we're at. The only other thing I just want to mention, just because it's about the distribution and the shrinkage, in the technical report, there are some graphs, and I don't know if you can bring those up on page 58, or Elizabeth, if you want to refer us to another place, but I think it does demonstrate that there is a spread of scores. It's not that every hospital is looking average in this data. So
just quickly from the applications on the bottom of page 30 and the top of page 39, which is
what item number?
The number is 2B5.3. But the range is 12.6 to 22.8. And the 10th to 90th percentile, which I think is more helpful, is 15.4 to 18.2. And so this is the range of the point estimates, but I want to emphasize what others have emphasized, which is we have, really much higher volume for these cases, so we haven't presented a confidence interval or an interval estimate around these, but we expect it to be much, much tighter than for other measures. For AMI, there are over 1,000 hospitals with one patient.
That's why we see a lot of hospitals with too few cases to assess the underlying, you know, inherent quality of the hospital. But for this measure, we don't have that problem at all. And whether we can come back with some numbers on it, I mean, I think we can. We just have to talk about the time frame.
But are the distributions of the...
Yeah. The left is the overall, where the five cohorts are rolled up, and the other is for the individual cohorts. So, again, those are the point estimates, but the precision of the point estimates in this model versus condition-specific models is expected to be much higher, so narrower confidence interval and choice around whether you say 95, 90, 80, et cetera. In other words, we think there it will be easy to find a lot of outliers of this measure.
I was just wondering technically if the NQSI could advise us on, I realize, for instance, that reporting by stratification, SES or whatever, is an implementation issue more than a measure issue, so to speak. So do we as a committee have an ability to say, you know, whether we vote yes or no, to say, if this were to move forward, we would strongly advise implementation with a consideration for stratification by and so on. Do we have, what's the limit of our ability on that?
I think, well, first of all, we do have a mechanism to recommend measures on certain conditions, and, you know, a condition could be stratification, but then the measure developer would need to respond to that, what their response to that condition would be. Our process would be we want you to vote on the measure as is. And then if someone wanted to propose a particular condition, we could certainly entertain that. And then we would ask the developer to respond to that. So stratification can be an implementation issue, but it can also be a measure specification. If it were an implementation issue, it might be comparing like hospitals. If it were a measure specification issue, it might be for each hospital stratifying the results by a particular factor. So, doing this on the fly, you know, generally steering committees are not developing measures as they go along, but it's something that you could request more information from the developer about possibilities in that regard. But I think the first thing is to vote on the measure as it's specified, and then if there are conditions or questions, we can certainly ask the developer to respond to those, not necessarily today, unless they want to briefly. I think we're going to have to take stock of where we're at the end of the day and see how we want to move forward.
Sure. I just want to, as we go forward and vote, remember that it's usually a bad idea to try to measure weight with a ruler, you know, and the sort of calibration issue, are they measuring all-cause readmission? That's the validity question. You're not using a ruler to measure somebody's weight. How it's calibrated and all that other stuff is a precision issue, and it depends on the purpose of measurement. Those of us in the measurement business get freaked out when you don't bring that into the discussion, but because NQS has decided to separate those two, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, this is a measure for whatever purposes, for accountability and quality improvement. That's the purpose of measurement, and we're hoping we have a ruler to measure height. Right? That's
okay. Mark and then Tanya.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I thought these graphs were really helpful, and I'm wondering if you happen to know if it is the case that the small hospitals are all sort of in the middle and the outliers are the larger hospitals. And to get to what Ashish and maybe someone else asked earlier, do we know what percentage of hospitals actually do fall below the cutoff and really are low enough that the whole shrinkage is even affecting them? Do you have, like, is it 5%, 1%? Do you happen to know that kind of roughly that number?
I don't think we have right in front of us right this second the distribution of volume at these hospitals, but we can come back with that easily. And again, this is the distribution of the risk standardized rates. And so then the construct those can be used in themselves, and there's quite a bit of range. There's a 10-point range there. But the construct CMS uses on hospital compare is to put, use a confidence interval around this to assign hospitals to better, worse, or no different. And we're just saying, with this measure, even with a 95% number, which is high, and you could use 95, 90, 80, whatever, it's not really specified in the measure, we would expect to see many, many more outliers and many, many fewer hospitals in the too few category, if any. I don't know if there are hospitals that don't have fewer than 25 cases, but we can come back to you with those numbers, and I apologize we don't have that, exactly for you at this second. You have to vote. Yeah.
I just want to elaborate on one second because...
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, Harlan Krumholz, I'm one of the developers. I think what you have to think about is, I don't think you should be thinking so much about empirically what comes, but what are the volumes, and what does this mean to address, and how does this extend what we've been doing so far? So if you are interested in a hospital signal, and you know that a lot of these readmission measures, they track each other, that's what the group's been able to show, and you know that by looking at the hospital-wide, you're going to increase your volumes for any specific period of time that you're looking at, then you can be confident that in that particular aspect, it's a much better situation than what you've currently got. And you can look empirically and we can provide you the evidence about what the numbers are, the outliers, but more importantly, looking at the volume shows you that this allows the small volume hospitals to be in the game. Because truly, I would expect this conversation to be more relevant if we're talking about MI and heart failure and pneumonia, where really what we've done is suck those hospitals into the middle, and we've made it very hard for you to be an outlier, high or low, in those conditions. And that's a problem that we've struggled with for a long time. And it's because of the amount of information that's available. But in this particular case, I think you guys should, from our point of view, this is a much of an advance in terms of being able to discriminate performance and be fair to the small hospitals by being able to draw on their experience. We just didn't have enough experience because so many hospitals see fewer than one a month in this nation for some of those particular conditions.
Is there any way we could hold off on voting until we get the information that Elizabeth was talking about? Just because, I've been critical of this measure during the discussion, but, underlying all that, I'm a big advocate for the all-cause readmission measure. And so I would hate to then vote against this if it turns out that the whole issue that I've been concerned about isn't really an issue at all. And that's pretty important information for us to have, I think.
Well, we probably can. I'll see what the chairs think about this. I think we have to be very specific about what question you have and whether that's something that can be provided in a short time. But we may want to get a sense of the group whether people want to get that information before they vote, and I think then we can be flexible.
In just chatting with Elliot briefly about this, it's my sense that we should take a vote now, and that in the comparison, because it may very well help the group make these decisions when we come back to compare the other two measures tomorrow, because if the consensus of opinion at that time is, this is not a perfect measure, this is not a perfect world, but it's doing the best we can with what we have now. So I think that discussion is probably a better reflection of, maybe we make NQF history and vote that nothing is appropriate for measuring readmissions tomorrow. But my sense is that kind of relativeness will help us understand where we are and aren't, and if this is an okay measure in this worst of all possible worlds.
So I think what you're hearing is a recommendation from us that we vote now with the option of sort of revisiting. We wanted to make it, we don't want people to feel that it's an absolute.
Well, I guess that's just a clarification. If the vote were no, could we still compare tomorrow? I think that's important to understand.
So procedurally, as we set up the competing measure discussion for tomorrow, we would not go to tomorrow. Now, if you feel that we really need to bring them all back for the head-to-head comparison, which we will have to do because most of these measures are competing, that's the will of the committee, right? And you would have to
Well, I guess it's a question. The true procedural decision would be is if it doesn't move forward, then there's no competing discussion tomorrow. However, if the committee felt otherwise and wanted to suspend that rule and then have that brought up for tomorrow, I mean, that's up to the will of the chairs and the committee. But procedurally, strictly speaking, if it does not pass overall recommendation for endorsement today, it does not go to a competing measure discussion tomorrow.
Okay, we're going to make a suggestion, see if everybody agrees to it. Why don't we go through the three measures, according to the protocol as it stands, and then depending upon what those results are, we can make a decision tomorrow about whether to revisit or do a competing analysis or what have you. I think, here, sort of common sense and a desire for a good product ought to prevail. Is everybody comfortable with that?
Let me propose a quick alternative, Elliot. I think maybe could we suspend the vote on the individual measures until the end of the day and then vote each one of them at the end of the day?
So that kind of implies that you want to do some comparison and...
Why don't we call the committee on those two options, because two chairs is just giving you two different options. So if you'd rather vote now, and then if you vote no, understand that you don't have the options to compare tomorrow procedurally. Or
let me just clarify. I think we have much more flexibility. I mean, generally we, if a measure doesn't pass, then it doesn't go into competing measures. We have kind of a unique situation here with having only three measures, all of them competing, and trying to address the congressional mandate. So obviously, although it's not required, we would like to see a measure that is good enough to come out of this process. And that may take some back and forth with the developers. So I don't think we want to present it as such an absolute thing. I think we should vote on the measure as it is. We'll do that for each measure, and at the end of the day, take stock of where we're at. Regardless of how many measures are voted up or down, we'll take stock, see if there are any issues that need to be revisited. So we're not going to make this this is not a final kind of not revisit vote at this point. And we want this vote to be based on, given the measure, and not think about either the other measures that are on the table or any kind of hypothetical measure in your mind, because those don't exist. So we're just looking at the measure as it's specified and with all the analysis and data that were presented to you. Would it be suitable for endorsement? And this is just a preliminary. As I said, this can be revisited if more information is helpful.
Everybody comfortable with that? Okay, so let's move to a vote.
Okay, voting on overall suitability for endorsement. Does the measure meet all the N2F criteria for endorsement? So this is final recommendation, again, will depend on the assessment of competing measures. So we're voting yes or no, and we may start. One person left.
Thank you.
So I'm Ron Stoner from UnitedHealthcare. And to give you guys a little bit of a background, we submitted and got approved the original, this original metric in 2008. And this was intended as an update. And in general, what we're going to propose is a relatively major update. So over the last 3 or 4 years, we have determined that the metric can be improved, and what we're proposing is the improved metric. And what we want to focus on, and what we've been focusing on using this metric internally, is for quality improvement. So we've had great success with this metric internally for quality improvement, both at individual facility levels, but generally across our market, across our state. And the other reason we wanted to make a change to this metric was we were approached by NQF about making it capable of being applied to electronic data, so electronic health records and so on. So in order to do that, we had to make a few modifications to the process. The other thing I'd just like to point out is that within, and just by using the historic metric, we have been able to increase and improve our results tremendously. About a 7% improvement in our Medicare readmission rate over the last 3 years, 3% in our commercial readmission rate. Again, mostly thanks to our partners at the hospitals, but in general, based on a lot of the quality improvement programs we've implemented. So our focus in the metric is to make it transparent and usable, as well as making it accurate enough to adjust out as much of the variation as possible that's due to case mix. So the idea on this metric is really a case mix adjusted, weighted process that will eliminate a lot of the characteristics of the initial admission from the outcome being the risk of readmission. And we tested it using kind of classic holdout samples and using our own internal data set, which about 20 million members, 4 to 5 million admissions. We used it to develop the actual factors themselves. And what we would propose is we will make public our factors. And those factors would, in a sense, replace the current factors that are out in the existing metric. So the existing metric attempts to use the CMS DRG consumption weights. We propose replacing those with weights internally developed specific to readmit, and we think that it improves, in fact, we know it improves the accuracy of the model tremendously. The categorization process we are going to employ is based on the HRQ procedure and diagnostic groups. And there are two different sets of categories, one for 0-64 and one for 65+. And there's about 220 groups for the commercial population, a little less than 200 groups for the Medicare population. And again, in our testing, what we found is that once you apply those weights, you can basically predict the ultimate results in the holdout sample or in the next year on a longitudinal basis to a great degree. And we try to make it simple. We try to make it easy to implement. It's implementable based on only the admission that you're looking at individually. You do not need longitudinal data to create to calculate your risk at that point. So a facility can use it concurrently without a lot of look back. Our implementations usually require a 6-month runout period. You need to have some runout to let the lag for the readmit actually occur. But in general, we think that it really does give you an advantage in terms of the practical implementations of quality improvement. It doesn't rely on older and staler data. In our implementation, we do share all the readmit information back to the facilities when requested. So if you have if you're a facility that does get a lot of tertiary care referrals and so on and transfers from others, you do get to see where those go and where they come from. And I guess I'll stop there and just open it up for questions, or I'm not sure what the process stuff is.
Okay, so are there specific questions for the developers? Any specific questions for the developers? Warren?
So if I understand correctly, your methodology is based on direct standardization, correct?
Correct.
And so for any individual, for any specific hospital, you have roughly these maybe 200 bins or so, and you determine the proportion of patients that were readmitted within each one of those bins, right? And then you apply those proportions to the standard population in order to obtain a standardized readmission rate. And my question is, are you concerned that within specific hospitals that those cells may be very sparsely populated and that could lead to some instability of the estimates that you derive based on those rates?
So the weights are definitely developed across the entire population of data initially, and then they're applied at the individual facility, at the individual budget level. And
so the rates are not based on the individual hospital rates?
No, the rates are the actual readmission. So we do calculate an actual readmission rate for each individual facility, and we calculate a adjustment factor for each facility based on those admissions. So you get it's very similar to applying the CMS consumption rates to get a risk-adjusted length of stay or a risk-adjusted cost per admission or cost per case. The logic is really very similar to that process. And depending on the case mix of your admissions in that time period, you will generate an average weight. And that average weight may be higher than average, lower than average, or average. And you use that to adjust your actual value to get an adjustment mark. And that adjustment mark is what you would use to compare yourself to yourself over time. So if you had a large change in case mix over 2 or 3 year period, it wouldn't be, you know, right to say, yes, I've done a great job with readmission reduction, or I've done a poor job with readmission reduction. You would want to be able to adjust to the change in that mix over time. And that's basically what this would do. And it also allows you, of course, to compare yourself to other facilities with potentially different mixtures. Then solve the problem of low volume. If you have a really low volume, then obviously the validity of the results is going to be, you're going to have a higher confidence interval in the results than you would if you had a very large, very high volume facility.
But I just wanted to clarify, but again, you're using direct standardization, and the rates for the bins for those individual cells are calculated for each specific hospital. That's very important because you're not basing those rates on the entire population. You're basing those rates for the individual cells on individual hospitals.
The rates themselves, the actual rates of a given time period.
Within each cell.
Based on the individual facility.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's move to the four areas that we have to, have to cover. And obviously, in the comments, particularly around scientific acceptability, there may be other questions that come up that would require a concise response from the developer. But let's start with the importance to measure and report. Are there any, we did this earlier, I think we've gotten past the issue of is this a valid outcomes measure or not, and come to, some accommodation on that issue. Does everybody feel comfortable with the criteria within this question, and are we ready to turn it over to a dealer for a vote? Hearing no dissenters, a dealer, take it away.
So again, on importance to measure and report, we're looking at high impact performance gap and evidence. Was the threshold criteria of importance to measure and report met? So we're voting yes or no.
And you can start now.
So we have 16 for yes. We're missing two people.
Okay. I assume we're comfortable with a substantial majority and we can move forward, yes? Okay. So let's move to the issue of scientific acceptability, and we did earlier, why don't we tackle reliability first, and then we'll talk about issues of validity. Discussion around reliability.
I think this is a reliability, but I hope it is. If not, it's just keep moving. But there was a phrase where it said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but it said risk adjustment calculation happens two ways. Retrospective analysis, positive performance determination, and real-time EHR environment. I'm just unclear in terms of reliability how those two methods are going to occur simultaneously across the current national landscape. There's such a mix between paper-based systems and electronic systems, and how does that play out methodologically?
That's a really good question. We've implemented it on our notification data. So UnitedHealthcare gets notification data from most of the hospitals in the country. We get it in real time or close to real time. So we've actually implemented it and compared the results to the claims-based version. One of the goals in this process is to make a single metric that could be applied in both environments. And all of our reliability testing that you're seeing in the document are based on the claims-based side. We have not yet completed the electronic portion, but we do believe that the weight may very well be different because the data is maybe less complete, or at least it's going to be different on the electronic medical record side than it would be on our claims data. And we think that chances are you will need a different set of weights for the EHR portion. So that was the main
thing
to get to.
Karen? So I think we didn't get E specifications, correct? Okay. So you're evaluating this measure as a claims-based measure.
Correct. The document that you have for you, but again, the point was that in theory it can be applied to the E side.
The thing is, we have some very specific requirements for electronic health record specifications and testing, which we don't have. So I think just to get everybody on the same page, you'll be evaluating this measure as a claims-based measure.
Can I ask a point of clarification from Karen? Be translatable to an electronic environment as well, how much of a handicap for this measure is that criteria?
Yes. I'm sorry, could you?
Yeah. If we are evaluating this measure on its electronic venue, if you will, how much as well without data or evidence to support or plans for and specific detail of plans for, as we saw in others' applications. Is that a limitation of the documentation that's been provided?
Well, I think what I was saying is that I think that although they mentioned that it could be done in an electronic health record environment, we don't have the kind of specifications for that, or it hasn't been tested that way. So I think we just won't even consider that for the purposes of this discussion and evaluation of this measure.
So this measure, if recommended for endorsement, it would be eligible for administrative claims data, as specified in their submission, that it's the data source is administrative claims. It's been tested in administrative claims. There are plans, as described by the developer, although what's in front of you is a claims-based measure and should be evaluated as such.
Can I ask one other follow-up question procedurally?
Yeah.
To what extent does the congressional mandate include electronic health records, or does it?
To my knowledge, it does not. It all includes that.
Okay.
So, kind of staying on that theme, so if I guess should we factor in at all the ability or the fact that we may be able to move towards
electronic sources of data at all into our thinking about this, or would you incrementally? The answer is no. Is that right?
I think the answer is no. I think we're strictly looking at this in terms of its criteria as a claims-based measure.
Yeah.
And the promise of translatability or applicability to an electronic record, I think we're going to have to keep entirely separate, as tantalizing as that may be. Other comments, Bruce?
So I take that instruction to mean that this paperwork would actually need to be edited, that if we did decide to pass 0329, we would not be passing portions of it that are discussing the e-submission, so to speak.
That's correct. I mean, most of that discussion is descriptive versus actual specifications for testing. So.
Right, but I wouldn't want there to be confusion about us. We're sort of tacitly saying 0329 has been approved, and then someone going back and saying, oh, okay, well, there it is. Right.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. Other comments about reliability? Okay. So.
I have a question, actually, about the precision using your past experience with this information, because we didn't get as much information on that topic. What is your experience with the measurement error of what you're doing?
So are you talking about the new measure or the old measure that was replaced?
That's a confusion to me, too. I guess we're talking about the new measure in front of us, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we did testing with very similar principles shown on the previous, sort of the last presentation. We tested to see how well it fits in terms of zero depth, the one slope, and it tests very well whether you're comparing actual half the data to a holdout sample. It tested very well. Whether you're comparing sort of a 2-year look versus a subsequent 3rd year that was not included, so in terms of a longitudinal ability to fit, it seems to fit very well. We also tested national versus regional specific factors, and those matched out very well. So is that sort of what you're getting to, or?
Well, let me push you a little bit on what very well means, because what we got so far is what I heard you say was retest reliability.
Yeah.
So what is the measurement error proportion of what you get at the hospital level? Do we know what's the true score variability at the hospital level and what belongs to measurement error? Because you've had some experience using this, right?
Yeah, and that stuff we didn't. Was part of our original question. We have looked at that subsequently. And again, I guess this comes to how much of when you fit to a hospital level result, how accurate you want that to be. And you could create a model that takes out all the variance between hospitals and fit very well, but that necessarily doesn't tell you much about relative quality performance of those hospitals that you get. Exactly predict how that hospital
performs. I wasn't actually asking the validity question, which is next. I was asking the precision question, which is the reliability issue. You talked about test retest, but I was wondering what part belongs to measurement error of what you've done, and what's the real probable true score variation that you're seeing in the hospital level measure.
Yeah, we did not test that at the hospital level. We were focusing on testing the individual buckets and. The RRC categories that we provide them doing and comparing those to see that those were accurately predicted over time and repeatable over time rather than still.
Okay, comments about, any other comments about reliability? Let's turn to validity. Comments or questions about validity?
Let's read the criteria again just to make sure. Can you read them?
The validity is assessing whether the specifications are consistent with the evidence, the extent of the validity testing at the data element or at the measure score level, basically where you just were. There's justification of exclusions, whether they relate to the evidence, risk adjustment, the risk adjustment model, identification of differences in performance and comparability of data sources and methods. If there, just as a procedural matter, if there's anywhere in the measure you want us to focus on and bring up in the screen, we're happy to do so. Also, obviously, there are the preliminary evaluations here that you can reference in your discussion as well.
Okay. Comments about validity? Frank?
Just a point of clarification on the document that we were sent, which is sort of a summary document. It's on page 6. You go into a fair amount of detail, great detail, by the way, on quoting verbatim the specific guideline recommendations for what look like process variables aimed at obviously facilitating an effective transfer of care. And it's a great list. I mean, it goes on page 7, 10, 11 sub-bullets. I was just confused about how the inclusion of that plays into what it is you are measuring and how does that relate to the validity of the measure that's being presented. It's a wonderful set of processes. I'm just not sure how it all fits in to what this particular instrument is going to do.
So that on page 6, the specific guideline.
Yeah, it starts on 6 and ends about midway through 7.
Yeah, I know, I'll be quite candid. I mean, we put in the guidelines that our clinicians use and feel we try to follow one and try to apply it here.
But I mean, is that playing a role in this particular measure?
I would have to read through them, honestly. I didn't put these in. The clinician, the part where he did.
I guess the technical question is, if it does, what role, and if it does, how should we ask to evaluate the connection assessment?
No, I mean, I think these are just in as references to what the guidelines are for, I guess, quality of care to avoid readmissions.
That would just be information about the relationship between this outcome measure and processes and structures of care. So it's back on the idea of it being a health outcome, and are there structures and processes of care that can influence the outcome. So that's just a list that...
I just want to be clear that as defined, the measure, I didn't see it anyway, doesn't suggest any way for any of these variables to be included in the measure.
No, that's correct.
So I was just confused about why they're there. That's all.
Okay. Other comments or questions on validity? Okay.
Mark, I'm sorry.
I missed you.
I don't know if I should bring this up now or usability, but I was curious about the decision to go from birth through, I guess, death. And 0 to 64 seemed like a very wide age range, and I'm just not used to seeing such a wide range, and I'm just wondering how that played out with case mix adjustment, how this plays out for children's hospitals versus general hospitals. Often it seems like case mix adjustments, just in general, not particular to all-cause readmission, is just very different for pediatric populations.
Yeah, that's one of the things we've actually, we wanted to make sure it was inclusive of pediatrics because our prior method actually wasn't. It specifically disallowed under 18. So we wanted to make this more specific. I will tell you that the OB and the PEDS diagnostic categories work out very well. They test well. I do think that one modification we, you know, may want to make is to split it into three to add a 0 to 17 set of factors as well as a greater than 65 and an 18 to 64. But the way it works now, they actually do test pretty well, and they actually work pretty well. Again, I would go to stratification would be my main emphasis there. We want to, and I want to compare a pediatric hospital in with the rest of the general hospitals in my measure. I think I would go to a stratified process and compare them to others of the same ilk. That would be, I think, the way to implement it. But again, that's kind of a process question for who's going to implement it. So.
Okay, Michael.
I find it
interesting that I'm the one asking this question this week, because I suspect the answer is really easy. But it's on 2B4, the risk adjustment strategy. The information was in the pack we got was simply this measure itself is risk adjusted. And I didn't really understand what that meant. I'm sure others do, but I didn't understand what it meant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that may have just been how we sort of interpreted the question was where the answers to that type of the question were actually placed within here. But I mean, really that is the entire purpose of what we've done here to create these factors based on the category, the diagnosis category and so on. That the sole purpose of that is to in fact risk adjust everything, and that's sort of risk adjustment data but spread out throughout the other segments, which is not really creating a 30-day readmission rate without any kind of adjustment would, I guess, not be that useful. So it's really all the risk adjustment, the entire purpose of all the calculations and creation of these buckets is to do the risk adjustment. So it's sort of spread elsewhere in the answers to the document.
Okay, Paul.
I didn't see a risk adjustment for AMA or transfers or rehab. Is there a reason for that?
For transfers, do you mean same-day transfers? So the one of the most important methods about this, obviously, is defining the case itself and making sure that you're looking at unique admissions and so on. So one of the most important aspects is to try to remove or to group the transfers together. So our recommendation is that if a case is transferred, isn't a readmit. It's excluded. You have to have a space between the discharge and the admit in order to be considered a readmission. I don't think that we have to. So rehab is in there. And what about
So I understand, so a patient who was transferred from or discharged from an acute care hospital and admitted to a rehab facility, which is bureaucratically the way you have to do it, that's considered a readmit.
As long as it was done on the same day as discharge, it would not be a readmit.
Okay, it would not be a readmit. Okay, so I think that was the question. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
The patient who went to a nursing home and then came back when they were ready for a rehab admit would be?
That would be.
Okay.
As long as it's within 30.
Well, yeah. Would want to.
Pam? Did you want? Okay, Bruce, and then Richard, and then Tanya, and then Warren.
Well, I raised my card to slow down the discussion because I'm not that comfortable with the sophistication of the risk adjustment approach, and I think I understand it. I know Larry was asking about whether this was really direct or indirect standardization or whatnot, but. And I'm just going to speak bluntly, frankly, it seems to me that this is a more crude response than we've been presented with earlier this morning, and that because the discussion was more detailed earlier this morning, we were discussing at a different level of rigor. As I understand, you've created several hundred categories interacting, age and procedures and diagnosis and whatnot, and then calculated a rate for those categories, and then I think you're crediting each institution with the appropriate rate based on case. But it's not a hierarchical approach, and this morning we were talking about some relative merits of hierarchical approach in which we were actually kind of condensing a hierarchical approach with the aspects of shrinkage, which we probably shouldn't have done. But this does not meet what I consider current standards of treating clustered data in a clustered fashion. And so I want to slow down the discussion and say I don't feel like we're holding this to the same level of rigor that we did this morning, and I would like to say I feel this is a less informed. I feel like we're looking at a less informed, insightful approach.
Well, I want to be careful because the volume of discussion does not necessarily reflect the assessment of the measure. It could be that people have come to some kind of an impression one way or the other. So
I agree.
I just want to be careful here that we don't.
Right. For that express reason, I didn't want discussion to only be 10 seconds and create an impression that everybody was in fact comfortable.
Richard?
Yeah, I want to, along the same lines, just make sure that I understand correctly. When you use the term risk adjustment, it's, I guess maybe semantic, but it really is a case mix adjustment. You're adjusting by a discharge, I mean, a diagnosis or procedure.
Or diagnostic procedure.
But in terms of the comorbidities, planned versus unplanned, other status, other factors are not going to be in, by definition, those boxes, right? They're just, it's just
yeah,
age and discharge.
Our understanding of all causes, it should be all causes. So we want to look at all
admissions. No, I understand that. So I guess to turn this back to validity, base validity is one aspect of validity, and you've had this in use. What have been the responses? What have been the, what's the impression of the providers?
We have, I can't remember the exact number, but we have a few dozen contracts signed that use this methodology in a performance-based construct. And we are very keen to make sure that it is linked with risk assessment and stage. They really think that's important to balance it. We don't want people to start to grow early or late and having them stay the longer. So I think it's a good balance. But, so we have it, again, it's improved our internal readmissions, and we have convinced hospitals to contract with us based on this methodology. Whether or not, I don't know how to, obviously we contract with thousands of hospitals, so it's a pretty small number at this point. But
okay, not to put a point on it, but secular trends are decreasing. And so we can't, for example, we can't just look at one population before and after and say, well, we've impacted the remission. Do you have any other external data to suggest that this actually was important in reducing the remission rate?
We can't control for the secular variables as far as I know. I don't know if we can.
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on the intervention you try and target. I mean, I think this can be used to identify facilities that may really perform. But then once you've identified them, there's no cookie cutter solution to sort of say, this is what we have to do for all these facilities. I think it's really just a matter of using the tool to identify places where there may be room for improvement, and then you have to look at the specific case to sort of say, how do we improve things? So it's part of the package. So.
Okay. Tanya?
This is a really dumb question, so I apologize. But on page one of the measure submission form, it says at the bottom, to committee, the measure includes planned and unplanned readmission. But then it doesn't, I didn't see anywhere else. I'm just curious, why is it including planned? Or how does it include planned in the way it
was? Well, our basic, again, we want to make the method be claim-based and dependent. Doing match pairs, in our opinion, is a very difficult and time-consuming and almost impossible thing to do for an individual facility. Again, we wanted to include all cause, all readmissions. There's just no good way to determine what's a planned readmit on the claim as far as our experience goes. It's reliable enough to be used in this company.
Okay. Laura?
At the risk of being redundant, my impression in looking at this particular measure is that it really doesn't level the playing field. There essentially is no adjustment for comorbidities other than age, and with age, you divided, the patients are divided up into two age strata, which is incredibly crude. That is my major concern with this measure, is there is extremely limited risk adjustment.
Brent and then Ashish and Bruce, are you still up or is it from before? Great, thank you.
So I'm just following this through. So essentially, just primary diagnosis, age, primary procedure. So patient A, both had a STEMI and both had angioplasty. Patient A also has COPD, diabetes, and major depression. Patient B didn't. They would both be an example of cannabis. Weighted risk readmission category. I'm just playing out what Norm was just saying. Just
And again, we wanted to make it based on the individual hospital admission and secondary diagnoses if they're not considered for the member. Comorbidities, we should take a historical time frame, pull all plans for the member, and identify every criteria they have. That's the only way to be fair in doing the comorbidity adjustment. So if you only base it on the claim, you run the risk of being
Yeah, I just want to be careful that we don't get into a debate about this. We're simply trying to clarify what the methods are, and then the committee members simply have to opine on them. So I just urge my colleagues that caution. Ashish?
I'm not going to get into a debate. I just want to understand it and maybe ask a question about it. It seems like you're absolutely right that if you get claims just from the hospital, it's going to be incomplete. It's not going to be perfect. But I would think, based on the other modeling data that are out there, that you get better than not doing it at all. And I guess the question is, can you talk a little bit more about your decision to opt out of that? And just since we were exploring options, is that a fixable issue? Is that something that you have to consider going back and doing to do this? And I realize that's not necessarily on the table. We're not here to recommend how you should build your measure, but just trying to understand the thinking behind saying, well, it's not perfect, therefore we're going to opt out of doing it at all.
No, I think it's definitely something to consider. Again, I think it comes back to a balance between usability and validity and reliability. I think there's got to be some kind of balance. If you make it too robust and too specifically refined, then we hear, well, 2 years old data isn't good enough, we can't wait that long, we need to see the other admission, and then nobody uses it, right? And then on ours, we don't have enough of that, so we don't want to use that one either. So maybe there does have to be some middle ground here that we can agree to and get a model that works and is feasible to implement.
Mark?
Yeah. I'm so used to thinking about removing chemotherapy as an example, as an effort to sort of get at sort of planned readmissions. Is that something that you guys tried in the earlier version of it? Did you try it? And we'll get to usability later, but has there been any pushback in the existing measure for not having removed, or we can never remove all planned readmissions, of course, but to make an effort to remove some of the more obvious ones, I guess.
Yes, there's been some pushback, absolutely. I think that if you think about the way the factors by default already improves up just for planned readmissions. The chemotherapy risk adjuster is very high. So there's a very high likelihood of readmit if you have a chemotherapy admission. We have had some facilities who want to stratify and isolate out portions of the readmission, transplants, chemo, and some of the PEDS, issues and things like that. So we have had some pushback there, but the nice thing about the metric is you can simply choose to stratify the population and exclude it from the metric and go forward basis if you need to. So it is flexible in that way. To completely exclude it and not even have it included as a weight and as an ability to use, I think, means that a cancer hospital can't be compared to their peers because we don't provide weight for the cancer hospital admissions. So we just think it's a good idea to include them all at the initial outset.
Leslie?
Yes, just for clarification, you've only tested this on hospitals that have contracted with you? Is that what you just said?
Correct, yes.
And so it's only your data?
We have not our data in as well, but the vast majority is going to be participating.
And is there anything proprietary by the data that you're collecting versus claims data that would be collected by CMS?
As far as we know, no. CMS has done a really good job of helping us standardize the data submission. So the data coming in on the claims looks very similar. We use the 5% sample. And there's no reason we couldn't do that. We don't think that there's anything in our method that would be non-standard that we wouldn't be able to implement on anybody's data set.
Thank you.
I just have one quick question for you. Somebody like me, I'm a psychometrician, so my use of the term factor means a little bit different than it sounds like you're using. So by factor, you mean variable? Do you mean a composite? Is there some method you use to approach the derivation of those whatever they are?
It goes back to the calculation of the risk factor for the readmit into those 220 groups. And that's basically what I'm referring to. So it's, how often do, admits that look like this, that have this clinical grouping, get readmitted, and that's how we create the factor in the first place, and then we apply it to the holdout sample to see how well it's predicted.
In terms of what we call in the biz sampling from the domain of observables, if those clusters vary, those clusters of characteristics vary, how confident are you that those clusters reflect the same overall construct?
Not sure I follow. So in terms of the clusters of each of the condition buckets, is that what we're talking about, or?
You've collectivized, in my understanding, 200 or some odd number of buckets. So they, in order to sort of adjust away whatever it is you think is an unfair contribution that's not a reflection of quality of care to that a hospital's readmission, if you're going to vary the cluster, similar to sampling different questions for a math test, they have to at least all measure math.
Yeah.
So to what extent do you think and have you tested that kind of clustering isn't measuring something that you didn't intend to measure for one hospital and something very different for another hospital?
We have not tested that.
Okay. No further discussion or questions. Bruce, you have one more?
I just want to know quickly, so again here, there's no FES or other resource consideration with respect to the population, the community, that's also, again, completely absent from these discussions.
Okay. Karen?
Yeah. And I just want to make a couple clarifications for the steering committee. Although this measure is an update or change to a previously endorsed measure, as Alexis pointed out earlier, our current process of endorsement maintenance is that whether a measure was endorsed previously or is coming in new, it's held to the criteria that currently exist. So, we have more guidance on reliability and validity and looking at the risk adjustment methodology. And so just to make sure that the committee is clear on what was presented, because it looks like some of the risk adjustment testing was actually put into the reliability and validity, so I'm not clear exactly what the reliability and validity testing were, but just to make sure that the steering committee has all that clear in terms of what was presented.
Understood. Adiora, I think we're ready to vote. So this is a scientific acceptability of the measure properties. And I think we read through the criteria before. And the question is, was the criterion scientific acceptability of the measure properties met?
So you guys go ahead and vote yes or no. Nicole, is Patricia back online yet?
Not yet.
Okay, thank you. So we have 18 no's and 0 yeses.
Okay, Tarun, would you like to tell us where we are?
So I will, the normal process here is to give a little bit of a rationale on the vote. What I'll do to try to move things along, not to be complete, but at least to signal the measure developers and for our own internal reports as we sort of move forward with this project, is to summarize a little bit at a high level what some of the major concerns were. Some of the concerns were raised around the age range, the dealing with the planned readmission. Additional details about the risk adjustment model would have been warranted. Questions about the reliability and validity testing, and FDS considerations, which are similar to previous measures. So as part of our procedure, if the measure does not pass scientific acceptability, it would not move forward, and with the clear consensus here, we would not move on to this measure. So I believe we're at public comment.
So before we go to public comment, is there any rationale that a steering committee member would like to be put on the record supporting the no vote that Tarun has not already expressed? My sense is he gave a pretty comprehensive list of the comments that he heard, and I didn't hear anything that, but there's nothing I heard earlier that I think was missed, but I just want to, you know, we just want to give the committee an opportunity to express that if somebody has a very strong opinion that was not captured. Hearing none or seeing none?
I have one comment, which is, in general, I thought that there wasn't enough, we weren't given enough data. And so I think I heard a lot of questions that suggest in the absence of data, we simply don't know, and that's one of the criteria for our votes. So, you know, if that is informative, great. If it's not.
You know, the one thing I would just say, this developer, and I'm not sure what the other developers would say, but we were given 3 weeks warning to submit this, and again, obviously, we should have had more ducks in a row and so on, but I thought the process was very challenging, especially, you know, when you have a business to run. It's not as simple to get this stuff out as you would think. And I know we had a lot more information we would have liked to have presented, but we did not have everything to do it. So I would say in the future, if you can give your developers just a little bit more time to actually prep for it, that would be a very beneficial
statement. I mean, this is the first project that NQF is doing, which is an expedited review. We recognize that the timelines are very short for everybody involved in this project, including the staff, the developers, and the committee members who would like a little more time to review the measures. We respect that concern. We'll take that back, and as we review further measures for potential expedited review, we'll consider that as well. And other measure developers have the similar timeline as the measure developers here. So
we're going to need to go for public comments.
Yeah, so we'll ask Nicole to open up the lines for any public or member comment.
Certainly. For public comment, please press star 1 at this time.
And if there's anyone in the room who would like to address the committee.
Okay.
So we're scheduled for a break. We're
scheduled for a break, but is everybody comfortable just working through?
Okay.
Okay. So why don't we do that? Thank you.
Our measure developer needs 5 minutes. That's the schedule start time. So.
5 minute break, but only 5 minutes.
So this is.
Okay, we have our developers with us.
Okay,
we're about to. Can I ask everybody to grab their places and we're ready to start with our third measure? And we're looking at 1768 Plan All Cost Readmissions from the National Committee for Quality Assurance. So why don't we begin with the importance to measure? I'm hoping, as you know, the third go-around on this one, we can dispense with this rather quickly and then get directly to the issues of scientific acceptability. Does anybody have any comments or questions they'd like to make around the issue of importance to measure? Was the threshold criterion importance to measure and report met?
Any comments or questions about that? I think we've discussed this quite a bit twice before. Adia, are we ready to take a vote?
Okay, on importance measure and high impact performance gap, evidence was the threshold criteria important to measure support met. Was the yes, yes or no? And you have a minute.
It looks like we have Jeopardy music in the
background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously,
yeah.
We
get a little tricky.
Okay, we have
18.
So we have 18 for yes and 0 for no.
Okay. Why don't we move into the issue of scientific acceptability and perhaps we could just
introduce
yourself. Oh, sure. Okay, I'm sorry. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
We would. So my name is Robert Saunders. I'm a research scientist at MCQA. I'm the technical lead for the development of this. I have with me Jeremy Gottlich. I'm a senior healthcare analyst at MCQA. Helps develop and measure logic with Robert.
And on the phone? This is Bob Brown, the Assistant Vice President for MCQA, responsible for oversight of our measures.
This is Donna Lyon. I'm a senior healthcare analyst. I manage all of the NQF measures for NCQA.
And I didn't know this is, we're still doing the 3 to 5 minute opening comment, if that's still permissible.
Sure, absolutely.
So I think we've had a very informative and enlightening conversation this morning as we've gone through the two previous measures here. I think as we transition into our measure, one thing we wanted to highlight is the fact that in the preceding measures, there's a hospital-based all-cause measure, and the unit of accountability is the hospital. As we look at the measure in this round, we're an organization that is about monitoring health plan as the unit of accountability here. And so one of the first things we wanted to point out is that there are hospitals that are, you know, the unit of analysis within the health plan, but the measures are aggregated up across health plans, so multiple hospitals are reporting to health plans. We think that this is really an advantage of this measure because it starts to move us up from the hospital's unit of accountability to a more population-based approach. So I think some of our earlier conversations about who is accountable for this focus on that there are issues related to transitions of care, and we think that health plans are certainly a key component to doing that. They're also key to understanding the totality of services that may happen to prevent readmissions, so we think that a plan-based approach is an important distinction to make. I think the other thing Tarun had mentioned at the beginning is that we should clarify some of the information that we presented in terms of the supplemental information, is that our measure development process has gone on for over 3 years, so we started the initial testing and development of this measure back in 2009. Our initial testing with commercial and Medicare Advantage plan-based data was in 2010 using 2008 to 2009 data. We've since gone into the field, so we've collected first-year measurement from health plans, both Medicare Advantage plans and commercial health plans. Those data are already in use at CMS for the commercial side for the 65 and older population. And we're in the process of, at the time that this call came out, we were in the process of updating the models for our second year of implementation. So I think the initial tables that may have been in there might have reflected the first year regression weights for conditions, and then we now have data from 2008 to 2010 for our Medicare weights. And so we have also modified the risk adjustment model to have a separate risk adjusters and weights for the Medicare under 65 and the Medicare 65 and older population. I think that would be it for, I think, in terms of the clarifications about the measure and the material that you have. Thank you.
Chris.
Could I immediately just ask you to clarify your last statement? So are you saying that there's information that we are not looking at, which you would like us to consider?
So I believe we had submitted separately an additional package with regression coefficients for the current specification model for a second year of data collection. I'm not sure where that is in terms of the packaging for the...
That information was sent to the committee subsequent to the original measure specification that you they see. So the risk weights is referred to.
Great. I didn't know if you were...
There's other
changes to the approach that are not incorporated.
No.
Okay.
Should we open the discussion around the issue of scientific acceptability?
Can I ask you a quick process question, or just a quick question to the developer? The measure type is listed as a process measure. Was this measure intended to be a process measure or an outcome measure? Because that would make a difference in the evaluation.
I think given the conversation we've had here, I think outcome is appropriate. We were torn. We see the re-emission as a process naturally that occurs within the system. But I think the way we talk about the measure of perception, I think we would revise our answer to the outcome. We think it's consistent with that.
Ashish? Just a couple of clarifying questions. So this is an health plan level readmission, right? Not a hospital level readmission.
That is correct.
Okay. And so I realize we're going to evaluate it based on that. Just speaking about sort of what we talked about in the morning around sort of congressional requests or requirements for developing a measure, that's really at the hospital level, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So this measure would not meet those needs, but we can still evaluate it for its validity, et cetera, et cetera. Do I understand that?
Exactly right. Okay. Helen clarified that for us offline.
Okay. And can I just ask as a follow-on, I sort of feel like I keep doing this, which is I keep asking, what else could you do with this measure, which is not the purpose, but could you potentially develop a hospital-level readmission rate, given that you have for the patients who are in the plans that you guys are covering or that are participating, you have all the data. Could you do that? Because I'm not sure why I'm asking outside of you. You probably know why I'm asking, but...
So I think that the short answer is probably not. So given the way the data, this is sort of speaks to sort of how we collect our measures. So we're sort of a hands-off organization in terms of the data collection. People plan, pay for specifications, and implement them either themselves directly or through their software vendors to calculate up how many hospital patients, all their handling the transfers, and so on. They then submit to us the aggregated performance information, the numerators, the denominators, those expected rates. And so we never see the data to know which hospitals are performing well within the health plan. The hospital, or the health plan itself, certainly has that data. And they're in a position to do that, and plus a variety of other investigational things, the way the measure is constructed, you know, having the CCs for the risk adjustment categories for the index condition, they can certainly look at whether the psychiatric hospitalizations have a higher readmission, propensity to readmit than other kinds of hospitalizations and so on. So we treat that as a health plan responsibility. Our job here is to create a standard metric for quality monitoring and accountability of the health plan, and then lead to the health plan to work with its network of hospitals and providers or medical clinics and other entities to figure out what quality improvement strategies will work and help move that metric.
Jeff?
I appreciate the sort of different approach that you took relative to the prior two, and I think it has some interesting implications. I wonder if you could comment, however, as to why we would want that to be the measure that we would endorse, given there are some practical limitations to having health plan level data in terms, and this perhaps jumping a little bit ahead in terms of usability, but conceptually and philosophically, why would we would want a health plan level approach if we're going to hopefully find something that is intervening in life?
Absolutely. So I think the the critical issue is, given that we are in a context of thinking in terms of 30-day readmission rates, I mean, there are a variety of other ways you could go about measuring readmission, so thinking about that problem, there are certainly people that are going beyond that now to think about what that is, but if we start from the premise that 30-day readmission rates is what you're after, one might think that the accountability function might decay as you get further from the discharge date. And so if we're thinking about the kinds of things that happen within the first 5 to 7 days of a hospital discharge are likely to be more in the hands of the hospital, there's probably a role for primary care, there's probably a role for the health plan, there's probably a role for a variety of other people to act. But I think the underlying premise for most of the hospital readmission measures is the hospital as the unit to act. As you get further out for 14 days or 30 days, the health plan is in a greater position to act to deal with the coordination issues between primary care, the coordination between the nurse care manager who's or whoever is calling to follow up about, did you make your appointment? Are you taking your medications in the right way? Are you having problems getting your medications? Those kinds of issues. So we think that the health plan-based measure is a complement to hospital-based measurement. Certainly don't think of it as a substitute. We certainly use the Yale approach to the condition-specific measures, which were already in place and already endorsed, as our initial model for testing of this measure. And we certainly look also at the United model and the DRG-based risk adjustment. We're certainly standing on the shoulders of people that are, have been very successful at this and look at endorsed measures as our starting point. But we think that there's a role separately for the health plan. And so I think sort of more broadly is that if we're trying to affect improvements in quality of care, that you can come at it from multiple angles, that it's not simply a measurement issue of readmissions and is it hospital or readmissions is it planned. There are a variety of other metrics that would be important to look at that would hopefully relate to any of our readmission measures. So we had care transition measures, thinking that would certainly support the validity of the measures. But I don't think as a field we're to that stage yet in the development of readmissions. But we certainly, as a measure developer, are developing things in a variety of these areas and, as we accumulate, we look for those delays.
I'd like a little clarification because I wasn't privy to the conversation that Elliot and Helen had, but for the purposes of those of us who are trying to sort of compare, we don't want to be comparing apples and airplanes here. We want to really sort of stick with truth. So if we're comparing the purpose and utility and validity and scientific rigor of a measure for one purpose, and we're trying to transport it to another purpose, and usability, certainly feasibility, and making that leap for some of us, I think I'm getting a little bit confused about the, I can understand the unit of analysis here, but I'm sort of trying to understand the unit of reporting and to what extent are we evaluating apples and airplanes.
Yeah, so we did a broad call for all cause readmission measures, not just for the specific hospital program they've talked about. So we saw these as potentially complementary, although I think one question was raised is whether one of the other measures at the hospital level could be aggregated up to health plan.
Right.
So those could be potentially competing. So that's what we've been thinking about it. I would, again, evaluate the measure on its merits and we'll return, I think, to those issues to follow.
So it's merits for?
Endorsement as a national consensus standard of all-cause readmission, and in this case, for health plan.
Yeah, I could do that.
Hold on.
I said
it before.
Yeah.
More discussion. All right.
Just a quick comment on that comment. I think as we start to kind of consider harmonizing these measures, it might make a lot of sense to pick the best of the best because two different risk adjustment models, I mean, it's not that difficult to take these models and aggregate them either at the hospital level or at the plan level. And if we get one model that does it at the plan level, and one model that does it at the hospital level, and these are different models that have different risk factors, it may end up giving us somewhat conflicting information, which may not be very useful for benchmarking purposes.
Sheesh. So the way I'm reading it is the risk adjustment, not the hierarchical shrinkage issue, but the risk adjustment seems to me very, very similar between what you guys have at the plan level and, let's say, what the Yale CMS group had at the hospital level. Is that right? Are they identical? Are they very close?
They're not identical, but it was our intention to mimic as much as possible their work.
I couldn't tell the difference, but maybe it's very close.
I'm sure they'll be able to tell you the difference.
Other more discussion?
Well, I was going to just comment on that comment. The Yale group has got five different models. So, and this is one model. So the coefficients are going to have to be different, I would think. This is more,
So my understanding is that the Yale group has one model meaning one set of covariates. They let the coefficients vary across
right.
the five models.
Right.
So the coefficients in this will surely vary, but that's because at the plan level, different things matter to a different level in terms of adjustment. But as long as the same covariates are in, I feel like the signaling values everybody about here are the things that matter for risk adjustment gets achieved, which I think was sort of your goal, right?
Yeah, I think that if you have five different models, although the covariates are going to be the same, the coefficients are going to be different. And so you're going to probably kind of see different results based on whether you're using their model or the Yale model when you're looking at the same unit of analysis. And I think that's where things may get a little confusing for benchmarking purposes.
Further discussion. Right?
Yes. Mr. Quest, again, I'm going to be clear about what we're voting on. We're not voting yet, but the way it reads says results about the quality of care. Now, this is at the health plan level. So we're not really talking about the quality of care directly anymore. We're talking now about the coordination of care by a payer within a given market. Is that what we're... I just want to make sure I understand. That's what this sort of measures, right? How a payer coordinates care through incentivizing interaction, care management, on within a market or within the reach of their payee group, right? Is that what we're now voting on?
Yeah.
Or considering, right?
Yeah, but it's kind of what? It's kind of what? Care, though. I mean, care manager program, that's care.
Those are all debatable. I would think of it less as care than I would the coordination of others' care. But you could argue both.
It's quality of care for the enrollees in a health plan, which could be done by a few number of hospitals or lots of hospitals, depending on who that health plan contracts with. But it still is, I think, supposed to be indicative of quality of care. It's just you're looking at it across a health plan now instead of an individual hospital.
And so the data would be useful then, again, I'm just trying to think about it, the validity of using it. It would be useful first to the plan in how they would go about setting their quality improvement methods, and then we would be relying on those plans to make that usable by the individual institutions. Is that it?
That would be our expectation for it, that you, the health plan would know the information about who they're contracting with and would have the detail at their own and their own data systems to identify which hospitals are responsible for which individual providers are potentially contributing to that.
Okay, Christine, then Leslie, then Tom.
I want to be sure that I understood the last discussion completely. The way I looked at this was that it was really looking, because it's a health plan measure, that it is looking at the underlying contracting and network provision through the hospitals as well as those services and programs that health plans may lay on top of that to manage the population. So to me, it is still looking at the quality of care provided in the hospital arena, but it does add that additional layer of looking at what the health plan itself does to manage the population within it.
And just to clarify, this would be just for those covered members within your system, and so would be then further stratified to covered people in your system, correct?
That's correct. So our measure is focused on Medicare Advantage enrollees, and we have a separate model for the under 65 population, so the non-elderly disabled, Medicare 65 and over, and then the commercial 18 to 64 population. Yes, it would all be treated separately, and it is contingent upon having one of those types of coverage.
Thank you.
Tanya?
More into the usability discussions, I'll save this for later, but I think this would be hugely useful for purchasers and for consumers, and especially with the implementation of the health insurance exchanges and having more information available to consumers at this level, I think it just would be enormously meaningful.
Richard?
So I'm trying to put myself in the position of a plan administrator, so it's going to be an exercise in imagination here for me, but stay here. It would seem to me that I would be worried that if you're going to compare my plan to Laurent's plan here, I would want to know that my service mix of patients is about the same, so that I have the same number of complex chronic patients and the same number of patients with chronic disease and the same number of sort of well patients. But I don't think in your model you accounted for any of that. Is that true? And if not, then why not?
So we have, to the extent that we've accounted for that, we've accounted for it in... God wanted to speak for me here. So we are adjusting for the patient attributes of care or other patient attributes, demographic in particular, that are likely to contribute to readmission. So we have age, we have gender, we have presence of major surgery, we have the index condition, so why you're in the hospital in the first place, and then your past year's worth of comorbidities. So to the extent that the for comparing plans, we're adjusting for that set of attributes.
And what about looking at specific hospitals? Because as a plan, I'd be concerned, well, I've got this one rogue hospital that I just can't control, but I've got 99 that are doing real well, but I'm going to be, you know, dinged because we've got some differences of opinion about how to manage. Did you look at that?
So, for the type of data we have, currently, the data that's submitted to us by the health plans in the first year of submissions, we don't see that level of detail. In the development data sets, we have the two data warehouses we use for commercial and Medicare data. We did not investigate that. I think, more strictly a sort of an NCQA sort of thinking about the problem as the health plan has to decide how to handle the rogue hospitals or rogue providers. They have the option to not contract with that hospital, or they have the option to take some other corrective action if it's through some quality improvement intervention. We are going to target resources to doing that.
So that's the last question. Did you consider looking at admissions in addition to readmissions? Because I'm thinking of if I have 100 asthma patients and so does Lauren have 100, I might admit quite a few but not readmit any, and there might be 3 chronic patients that tend to get readmitted and his scores look worse than mine, even though I might be really using much more of the hospital than he was.
We definitely think We did not specifically address that, but we definitely understand that the readmissions issue is not an independent entity, that there's a whole complex issue of avoidable hospitalizations generally, and the hospitalization you want to avoid is the index hospitalization as much as the readmission hospitalization. And, I think we have a series of resource use measures that focus on hospitalization. We're looking at risk adjustment in specific clinical conditions, diabetes, cardiovascular care, that are coming online this year. So we feel like that's measured in other aspects of our portfolio, and it's not, therefore it's not treated as part of the scope here.
Sure.
I have a sort of follow-on question to that. To the extent that you choose hospitals, hopefully, that provide good care for your health plan recipients or clients, the selection bias seems to me like a real concern here. And the other issue we had rather lengthy discussion about here is the variability in the precision of your estimates by hospital. So, one, can you talk to us a little bit about selection bias and what that does from an NCQA standpoint? And the other thing is if the precision of estimates, how are you taking that into account in your potential for feeding back to the hospital about the readmission rate?
If I ask you to sort of go a little bit further on the selection issue, so I want to make sure I'm answering correctly. Are you selection for an individual patient looking to select a hospital, or a selection issue for the comparison between health plans?
Plans hopefully channel their patients to hospitals that provide good quality and efficiency, but quality is one of the hopeful criteria that they channel the patients to. So plans are then selecting hospitals for patients that provide high quality care. We know that there is a volume outcomes relationship. Hopefully the plan is thinking about that too. So I'm worried a little bit that the selection bias here, when you're talking about providing this at the hospital level or feeding back to hospitals information, that gets taken into account along with the potential variability in that information at the hospital.
So I think I'll probably fall back on this may not be satisfactory, but I think for us it's for the health plan, that is who we're feeding the information back to. Or we're feeding back to the consumer the information about what that health plan's performance is in handling readmissions. And it is both a measure of the quality of care provided by that health plan, and is both it's a measure of accessibility of services that we would not, not thinking specifically about how that would feed back directly to the hospital. We think that's a conversation between the hospital and the health plan, and we think that they would have those discussions and would start to make those arguments about whether they're being unfairly penalized in some way. But let me jump to the precision question. Peter, can you restate the precision question?
Well, depending on how the plan level data are sampled, for example, you get N patients per plan to estimate the plan's performance. You know, it gets pretty thin if that number is 400, you know, to the extent that you can give any kind of specified data. And again, if your intent is not to keep back to the individual hospital, I understand, but you sort of said that in your opening remarks, that was a potential something you could have done. One, the selection bias with respect to participation in NCQA, and two, you know, how does this hospital readmissions issue play out with respect to your current sampling structure?
So I'm not sure of the specific numbers of the proportion of health plans that report to NCQA, but it's quite high. It's high, like it's, we've only got 20% of health plans here. I think it's in the neighborhood of 90% of health plans. So we don't think there's going to be a systematic bias in that form or fashion. In terms of precision, you're right. I mean, we're definitely worried about comparisons on small numbers for special needs plans and looking at those individual contracts. Some of these have maybe 100 hospitalizations and certainly would be reluctant to make those kinds of comparisons. We are in the process of figuring out where to set that threshold for public reporting. we're not setting a threshold, though, for submission to us. You know, we're not saying if you have to have at least 500 hospitalizations to calculate this and send it to us. We're saying submit it to us, and if there's a lower end for what's reliable, whether that's 100 or 500 or 2,000, wherever that threshold is, we'll set that for reporting. We think of that as a reporting issue. We certainly understand it as directly influencing the reliability issue for the fairness of the comparisons between health plans. But I think if it may be in the data that we presented, just in terms of the actual denominator size of our health plans, that almost 75% of our Medicare Advantage contracts were able to report at least, we know that at least 96% were able to report, but I think at least 75% of our Medicare Advantage health plans had at least 7,500 enrollees. So we're having a decent volume of hospitalizations within that group. And that's, we're not so concerned about small numbers on the commercial side.
Ashish and then Jeff?
Because we tortured our Yale colleagues on this, I think, with campus, yeah, so without talking about FCS. How have you guys thought about it, given the variations in FCS makeup of the different plans? And sounds like you came out against including that in your model. But if you could just sort of give us some of your thinking on that, that would be really helpful.
Sure. So we definitely understand that there's likely a relationship between FCS and performance on this measure. Typically for most NCQA measures, we don't do any risk adjustment at all. We have such a focused denominator that it's, we think of the quality issue as if you don't do this, you're doing something wrong. Readmissions is one of the first of our measures that's kind of going beyond that to worry about it. As a procedural issue for us, we don't have a really good way to evaluate the SES within the community. The health plans don't report that information to us. They're writing, I'd like for them to report as well, that are not in there. It doesn't seem to be in their capacity to do. So there's a technical limitation to we can't get the SES data. But I think as a practical issue in terms of the comparisons, you know, this would mean something if you were comparing a health plan in Minnesota to a health plan in Florida. But the decisions that are being made are on a more local scale. And so if we're comparing the health plans in the Washington metropolitan area, we don't have any reason to believe in advance that there's an SES difference between the health plans unless they're particularly good at dumping or identifying ways to dump their people into other plans. They're certainly able to deny them, or used to be able to deny them coverage, I think. We'll see where how far ACA gets along here. But we don't think that there's likely to be SES differences between health plans. To the extent that we have the market stagnated between Medicare Advantage plans, commercial plans, we do not specify this for Medicaid. There are a variety of technical issues we can sort of go into about that, but we think that there'd be certainly homogeneity within those product lines. But the real issue is we don't have the data to do anything about it.
That sounds reasonable. I personally think there probably is a lot of heterogeneity in socioeconomic across plans. But we've had a conversation about why it might be reasonable not to include it anyway, but it doesn't matter. But thank you.
I would certainly have the data to know about it, but the plans are probably jealously guarding that.
Okay, Jeff, and then we're going to have to come to a decision about scientific acceptability.
Earlier there was discussion about the concept of the rogue hospital that had sort of outliers in performance. It strikes me when you aggregate data at this sort of health plan level, you might have rogue hospitals that would in fact not stick out, and that might get errors in the data. And I wonder how, since you frequently are used population health level, that there's a lot that the health plan can do sort of in the more dipping healthcare access and follow-up pieces that you put out. But the hospitals individually are quite a big part of that. And if there is a rogue hospital and it doesn't get buried, how does your measure help to allay those concerns?
Well, I think certainly NCQA is a voluntary measurement process, and so I think we are, it is a issue where we have to rely upon the diligence of the people that are being measured and volunteer to be measured on the issue, that they're looking to ferret out these types of issues. Our thinking is that to the extent that there is a way to distinguish yourself in performance, and whatever incentives it takes to do that, whether it's an incentive that I want to be a high quality provider on readmissions, or if it's a financial incentive to get better on that performance, that somebody is monitoring the measure and doing the additional quality improvement activities at the health plan level to identify those where if the administration is kind of asleep at the wheel, then that's a problem for everybody and for any measurement strategy. I think
let me make some sort of summarizing comments, and actually I'm going to borrow a phrase that Sherry used before, and that is you can't measure weight with a ruler. And I think the point here, at least what I've taken away from this, is that the call was for all-cause readmission measures, and obviously that did not exclude measures that were not at the hospital level. So what we have before us is a measure that is at the plan level, and our task is to decide whether it meets scientific acceptability and feasibility and the other criteria for what it is. Now, we may have issues with it, maybe not, as to whether there should be, as Lauren said before, different methodologies with a measure we might expect to be used at a hospital level versus something at a plan level. But frankly, that's something that probably can be discussed tomorrow in terms of the comparisons across. So I just want to make sure we don't trap ourselves into thinking about this in terms of answering questions that really wasn't designed to answer. It's really at a plain level. I do have, if I may, just one quick closing question, and it may have been in the specifications and I missed it, but does it account for the movement of patients from plan to plan? So is it the equivalent of a universal PIN or patient identification number or some such thing?
It does not.
Okay.
One more question. I apologize. I forget your response to Larry's question about the hierarchical modeling, because now you've added another chair to already complex nested issue. And your decision was?
So it's actually even worse than that. It's not even another level above. It would be nice if it was all nested. That is pretty extremely cross-classified here. So we have patients going to multiple hospitals contracting with multiple health plans. So it would be, first of all, it would be probably beyond my means and my HLM ability to get the cross-classified model to estimate. I think I could do it if I had the data. The second issue is I don't quite have the data. So if we think about where kind of Yale's model is working off of the 100% CMS file. So that the totality of hospitalizations and the totality of admissions and readmissions going on here. We have a development database that has, in the case of the commercial population, a million hospital admissions. It's nationally, it contains cases across the nation, but is not the universe of commercial hospitalizations. Likewise, for Medicare Advantage, we have a database that has the first year was 22% of Medicare Advantage enrollees. The second year we have about 45% of Medicare Advantage enrollees. So we're taking a data model that is not the universe here and then trying to, it's not the universe of health plans, it's not the universe of Medicare Advantage enrollees. So we couldn't
come up with an estimate that would apply to each and every individual health plan coming in. So what we have to rely upon is the fact that we have a large enough proportion of Medicare Advantage enrollees that we're avoiding serious selection issues that by having at least half the enrollees represented in this, that we're not doing something crazy untoward in our inferences. And likewise for commercial, we don't think that there's reason to prefer Market Scan to the Genic Warehouse that we use for estimating on the commercial side. So we're sort of getting the best number that we can, given that we don't see hospital-specific hospital numbers and have the ability to link hospitals to their specific coverage.
Okay, so two quick questions, Leslie, and then Warren, and then, okay, Warren, and then we're going to call the question.
So one of the questions that I asked earlier, and I didn't quite get the answer that I wanted, and I'm going to ask you this question. Did you look at calibration curves when you were evaluating, when you were validating your model? And the reason I asked this is, we really haven't talked about this too much today, but I really do think it's very important, is that if you're going to do proper risk adjustment and level the playing field and compare apples to apples, it's really important that you look specifically at the model performance at different levels of risk. So, for example, if a model systematically overestimates mortality in, or not mortality, readmissions in high-risk patients, and if different hospitals have different case mixes, then that model, the poor model calibration, may lead you to make conclusions about hospital quality that are completely unwarranted. And in our last discussion, we looked at a summary measure of calibration, and those summary measures can hide an awful lot of information, whereas calibration graphs really do a great job of showing us how well the model works at various risk levels. So did you look at that?
I do not. I don't have that available, but I can certainly pull that out. I think there's discussion of additional material to put forward later. I think we put that together, but we did not look at that.
Okay, Adela.
Okay. So scientific assessment of the properties are both reliability, validity, graded, moderate, or high. Again, we're looking at 2A1 precise specifications, 2A2 testing, 2B1 specifications consistent with evidence, 2B2 testing, appropriate methods and scope with adequate results, and threats to validity are adequately addressed, 2B3 exclusion, 2B4 risk adjustment and stratification, 2B5 meaningful differences, 2B6 comparability data sources. What's the criterion of scientific acceptability of measure properties then? So one for yes, two for no, and you can start right now. Oh, Patricia, are you online now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Do you want to cast your vote? So we have 8 for yes and 10 no.
Hello.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I think that leaves us in a position where we're essentially stopped for the moment that, at this point. As we did for the second measure, I think Tarun and the staff have been collating some of the comments that they've heard. And, in terms of rationale, Tarun, I don't know if you're ready to go over that or...
I mean, we have some. Just for the sake of completion, I'll hold off on it until tomorrow's discussion when we sort of collate all this information together.
Okay. What we've talked a little bit about is, what to do at this point.
We have one measure that we voted and, you know, sort of decided we were going to hold in abeyance, if I read the sentiment correctly, forget about exactly what the numbers are. We have two other measures where we were sort of stopped at this particular point in the process. We certainly need to have the comparison discussion tomorrow. And Sherry and I think that a fair bit of the comparison discussion, particularly in view of some of NCQA's comments around a fundamentally similar methodology to what the Yale folks presented earlier, is what flexibility is there, and based on some of your very detailed recommendations this morning, what tweaks and modifications to the system you heard in depth or in detail from Yale, and then essentially here as well, can be made. I think one of the things I heard Lauren say at the outset of this conversation was concern about approving a methodology at one level, i.e. the health plan level, and then having yet a different methodology at the at the hospital level. So if tomorrow some of the concerns that the group have or had about the Yale methodology can be addressed and perhaps fine-tuned a little bit to make it a more acceptable model, then we could probably revisit a discussion with NCQA in the hopes of harmonizing the two, with the understanding that you need something at the plan level and we obviously would like to get something at the hospital level. Have I been clear about that? I hope I'm not too convoluted. I try to lay it out as crisply as our discussion from before. That would put us in what I guess the enviable position is of finishing early. And what we would do is adjourn now, give staff some time to talk, possibly with NCQA and certainly with the folks from Yale, so that we could start tomorrow morning with an informed discussion about what flexibility there is in addressing some of the concerns from the group.
Ellie, is the spirit of the...
Go ahead. I was just going to reiterate what you were going to say anyway, but in the sort of spirit of a fully throated discussion, I think Helen wants us to continue on the last two criteria since it was a close margin on this criterion.
Yeah. Okay, so
Can
you explain a little bit about what I read the materials, but would harmonization mean that in the end there's a single measure, or is it NQF has endorsed the combination, but the two entities might still sort of put their measures out there separately?
Well, I'm going to free associate here a little bit because I think, NQF has to decide how they want to handle it. But what I think I heard is that there may be a need for a plan level measure as put forth by NCQA. There certainly is a need for a hospital measure as was put forth earlier by the folks from Yale, and that at least some of the members of the committee expressed earlier that if we're going to have either or both, or if we're going to have both measures, then it would be nice to have a methodology that harmonizes. So it would be, I'm assuming, eventually two separate measures, but hopefully two separate measures using very similar methodologies to the extent that they can be used. Does that sound reasonable?
Sure.
Yeah, I think, to the extent possible, when we talk about harmonization, we're talking about the measures being as closely similar as possible on definitions of who's included, who's excluded, risk factors, those kinds of things. Now, how close we get on any two measures, is a factor related to the data availability, maybe special circumstances with a special population. But generally, we would like to not have measures be consistent when we need more than one measure. So as was brought up earlier, sometimes we ultimately would like the broadest applicable measure. So, ideally if you had a measure that could be used at multiple levels, that would be great. Sometimes that's just not possible, and then we try to get measures that will be as consistent as possible.
I have a question, follow-up question for Helen and to ask. If you're estimating different levels of performance of the healthcare system, the idea that you can do one size fits all may be a sketchy assumption. And, you know, so to the extent that these, you know, risk stratification issues are different and they recall how much, I'm a lumper by training. I do lumping. That's what I do. But this may be a real splitter kind of issue.
And it's much more dicey with outcome measures if you're talking about risk adjustment methodologies. If you have a straight process measure where there's no risk adjustment, it's a simpler, even though they are terribly difficult, maybe simpler than outcome measures. So, you know, each one presents differently.
Rich? Is it time to start this discussion of feasibility?
I have one more question.
Well, the other thing that I want to talk about in the harmonization is looking at these two. The burden is going to be on the hospital either way, and both. And so then, because the health plans will come back to hospitals if they're not performing. And we just don't want it to be a double impact to the hospital. The hospital has to look at it this way and now this way. So I just want to put that out there.
I guess given the scientific validity is such a key part of this, and I'm a little, this sort of shows how in tune I am with our group here, I was a little surprised at the vote. Were we going to get sort of a synopsis of what the main issues were on scientific validity before we move on to usability, just even like two or three points of what were the main concerns? Because I didn't hear them in the discussion as clearly as I did.
And I think that was actually one of the, so I do want to like at least have some time to go through some of the notes, but some of the main issues that were brought up that I heard, actually Sherry made a lot of them, maybe she can elaborate, but concerns around selection, potential selection issues. The precision questions around the reliability testing of the measure, and potentially additional more information around the measure performance at various levels of risk. That isn't intended to be the complete list. I mean, I'm sure there's more, but that seems to be the sentiment of the group. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, shall we move on to usability? And again, remember, we're not talking about usability at the hospital level here. We're talking about usability at the plan level. And for the public, it would also be at the plan level, presumably in the region.
Rich? Yeah, so my fundamental concern with this measure would be usability. And because at the plan level, we really do have a potential to make an impact in terms of consumer choice. Consumers often don't choose the hospital, but they often do choose the plan. Sometimes they can't choose the plan, but oftentimes they can choose a plan. So I sit here and think, would this actually help me choose a plan? And I know it's, you know, measuring readmissions is involved as a surrogate of coordination of care, but coordination of care goes beyond coordinating those patients who were admitted to the hospital. We would like to coordinate care so patients don't have to get into the hospital, and so they don't have to get into the ED. And to me, it would be more fundamentally useful to know if, let's say, I had asthma or CHF, how good are you keeping me out of the hospital? How good are you keeping me out of the ED? And a plan can measure at that level. A hospital can't. So it just strikes me that this is perhaps not unimportant, but it seems like a very small component of how I would use a plan. That's good. So are you basically, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, I don't understand. So you're basically saying that you think that readmissions is not that important of a measure at the plan level? So sort of the importance of this measure is the fundamental issue as opposed to its validity or its... Yeah, maybe it's the informational content of the measure. I'm not sure that it, again, to me, as a consumer, it conveys a lot of information because I would certainly want to know that the plans are comparable in terms of the underlying populations, which we don't know. And I'd certainly want to know, for my particular condition, how good are you overall in coordinating the care, not just once I get in the hospital, because I really don't want to go in the hospital in the first place. So it's more informational content.
Tanya?
Well, I respectfully disagree. I think that, you know, this measure would be reported alone, I'm assuming. It would probably be reported as part of the greater HEDIS measure set, which does give you information if you have asthma or CHF or some other chronic disease. I think for patients with multiple chronic conditions that really have to make some significant, you know, calculations in their mind about cost and just their health status when they're choosing a plan, having this type of information would be incredibly important and usable to them. And that's, you know, if they do have a choice. And as I mentioned before, you know, in 2014, hopefully people will have greater choices with health plans through the exchange. And then one thing that Christine can also elaborate on, you know, there aren't that many, there aren't too many measures right now that are really relevant to purchasers, especially private purchasers. And I think that private purchasers are making decisions about contracting with health plans and finding a measure like this is important as well. And it will raise all sorts of questions for them to be able to talk to health plans about, to talk to brokers about, in terms of what type of care coordination strategies are you using, how are you going to make sure that my premiums don't go up every year. You know, this starts a conversation, and as well as giving important information directly. So I think that the usability, to me, I never questioned that on this measure.
Can I follow up that with you, Tanya? Will Manning, when we were at RAND, did this, you know, in those days, the old study was, if your plan changed by $3 in terms of the premium, you'll dump it. It doesn't matter these quality issues. You will change plans on the basis of a $3 difference in premium. So I'm wondering, do consumers really get it, that high readmission rates? Some consumers might look at that and say, oh, good, if I need to, they send me back to the hospital. Oh, that's a great plan. Do we really know a lot about how consumers use readmission to hospitals?
Well, unfortunately, I think what we do know is that people do look at it as, you know, rationing care if you're trying to reduce readmissions.
Yeah.
You're right, that's a problem. And there's a greater contextual concern here, which is how do you engage consumers in understanding the quality information that's out there. And we're trying to push for that with all the information about the exchanges coming out. But, you know, it's all part of a big continuum. But you're right. My theory is if we get the best information out there, then hopefully people get engaged. But that's a whole different issue.
And we've done some work on this, not specific to readmissions, but in terms of looking at resource use in combination with quality. It's the same type of problem of more perception that more is better and indicative of quality, which we know is often not the case. That you know, Judith Hibbert's work is sort of looked at the impact of the context of information and how you present it. So if you can provide the information in a qualitative way, provide it in a way that is nuanced to emphasize the direction that you want to be nudging people, that there are ways to present the information to encourage the right type of behavior. And we think that our measure would be capable of doing that.
Thank you. Right, let's just go right up the line this way. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm Richard on the usability of this. You know, at the big picture level, we're talking about three-legged stool. We haven't even talked about the third leg at all mm-hmm. today, which is probably as important as the hospital as the ambulatory care mm-hmm. system. And I think the hospital and ambulatory care are much more important than the plan. To the extent that plans have historically been important, it's because ambulatory care has failed in some of these coordination issues. Just philosophically, I'm not sure that this as a complementary measure would be all that usable. If it was usable, you really need to know, to look at this hierarchical analysis and understand for each plan, not only the final outcome, which is plan-to-plan comparisons, but for each plan, look at the hospital-level data. That would be the only way to really make a meaningful conclusion, I think, about not only how the different plans in your market support this work, but now for health partners, mm-hmm. what do the different hospitals look like versus, because they're not apples to apples at all, because it's not a nested analysis. It doesn't have fee-for-service Medicare. It doesn't have a lot of different populations in it. So if you have the hospital measures for your market sitting here and the plan measures for your market sitting there, you made a lot of, I think, erroneous conclusions. But they're not nested.
Right.
So that to me, from a usability standpoint, doesn't work that well. I'm having a hard time getting my head around that part of it.
I was quickly responding to that. That has not been an issue that was raised in any of our public comment by any of our health plans. They're not concerned about those types of comparisons or unfairness of that. So.
Thank you.
The other biggest thing is that we get this.
Yeah.
We get this. So readmissions are improving in our market. We have this measure saying it's a plan issue, and it's because the plans aren't doing their job. We have this issue saying the hospitals aren't doing their job, and we don't get any better. That, to me, is even a bigger philosophical.
Yeah, I concur. That, for me, is an NQS issue, because we are, that's beyond the scope of our charge, I think. But thank you for raising that issue. Frank?
Very short series of events. I only got this halfway formulated myself. One of the concerns I had about the previous measures were everything you've already heard about, the focus on one part of this complex system, so hospitals, readmissions. And there's something compelling about the focus now on the plan level, where within at least that universe that the plan represents, you've got this constellation of data that includes both the centers and the receivers, and this overlay that was described before by Christine, which I think has promise. There have been a relatively finite number, although they're very important, and I don't want to minimize this, but there's been a finite number of methodological recommendations that we've heard in the Pacific Rim. You know, the way the data's been massaged, you've asked some calibration tests and questions. I don't know that any of those are not addressable, and there seems to be something potentially compelling about finding a way to address those for both of these in a way that allows for the identification possible at the hospital level, which locates data where it needs to be for quality improvement activities, and harmonizing that simultaneously with data at the plan level. The devil's going to be in the details on this, but I'm hoping that enough was captured in all the recommendations, I'm sure it was, that specifically around trying to remediate these, that there may be a win here if these can be modified in a way to address those to the satisfaction. I just don't know if that's doable in a day and a half.
Right. I thought you were headed for best in class. It's different classes. So, you know, I thought that's where you were headed, but, you know, that I respect you. I think that's for comparability tomorrow as a question. Christine, and then Leslie, and then let's call it a day.
Yeah, I appreciate this. I think usability is usability by whom, and I do think that Tanya brought it up, that from the purchaser's standpoint, their primary relationship and contracting relationship is with the plan. Therefore, looking at the plan's performance, looking at this measure at the plan level, is a critical component, because to be quite honest, they don't want to have to get down into the thousands of hospitals that may be in the plan across the country. Down to that level of detail. We have started using readmission measures and evaluate, which is a health plan performance tool from the National Business Coalition on Health. And it's just been using some NCQA data that's really just now descriptive data versus really analytical data. But I will say in the first year of trying to use this information, it has been very important to the purchasers to say, this is a measure of really population management around this one issue. And to Tanya's point, this isn't the only measure we would look at. We would marry this with other measures. But it is something that I think employer purchasers especially will hold their plans accountable, because it is more of a population-based approach where we layer the plan programs on top of the hospital. So this is very important to the purchaser community.
Thanks very much. Leslie?
And I think the question is, which population? My concern is that if a hospital is being measured in one way, and then the plan can reflect a different measurement about that hospital, perhaps that hospital with limited resources only attacks those patient populations that are covered in both entities. So what happens to those patients that aren't covered in any plan or underserved or in a safety net environment? Do we put resources only, again, where there is high coverage and high visibility and not resources where there's underserved?
Excellent point. Okay, I think it's time to vote. Adela?
Okay, so on usability, we're looking at N3A, meaningful, understandable, and useful for public reporting and accountability. N3B, meaningful, understandable, and useful for quality improvement. So to what extent was the criterion usability met? You can go ahead and start voting. We have one high, two moderate, three low, four insufficient.
He voted?
No. So we have three for high, six for moderate, seven for low, and one insufficient. And Patricia, did you want to cast your vote?
Okay.
Yep, we're good.
Do we know? Okay. Now we're moving on to the feasibility issue. Okay, feasibility, the criteria are clinical data generated during the care process. All data elements are in electronic claims. The success is how susceptible are they to inaccuracies and unintended consequences, and the data collection strategy can be implemented. Comments? No comment. No comment? From this group? You're tired. This is fatigue. So if I can ask one quick question. So, you know, to the extent that NCQA is a known entity, they clearly can deal with clinical data. What happens with electronic claims? There's vendors all over the place in electronic claims. How confident are you that all the data elements you need to estimate readmissions, including the risk stratification variables or risk adjustment variables, are in the various bunches of claims vendors that you're dealing with?
Thank you. We're very confident in that. As I mentioned before, we've collected our first year data with the health plans. We were able to get 424 Medicare Advantage contracts submitted, 314 commercial health plans. So we know that they're able to populate and submit that information to us. Part of how we know that it is of high quality and reliability, first of all, is we have our certified software vendor program. So we have developed test beta sets for the commercial software vendors who are certified by NCQA to come up with, if you implement the measure specifications, are they getting the right counts out of a test beta set to evaluate? And the implementation of all the programming logic and identification of all the related services and how they're handling it, primary diagnosis is transferred from this setting to this setting types of issues. The second layer of quality control we have is our auditing process, and so we have certified auditors throughout the country that attest to the performance of the health plans and the submissions, and so they were key to us in our first year analysis. We weren't sure that they would implement the risk adjustment process correctly, that they did apply the wage, that they would find all of the comorbid conditions and the professional services, that they might just focus only on the hospital stays. Through our auditing process and our discussions with, we had focus groups with a certain number of key auditors around the country, so that there were no problems in terms of implementation of identification of the services with the calculation of the measure. It gave us the confidence to then proceed on with the improvements that we're making in the second year to divide the risk adjustment process for the Medicare population and to have separate ways. We felt that we were capable of doing the work before that they were able to take this next step.
Thank you. Other questions? Go ahead.
The data collection at the, I'll say at the hospital level with the choirs,
It does. They're using CPT, UV codes, HIPAA, everything.
But we know if the hospitals today they want to do SP9. So would this represent a different process, data collection and coding and voiding? We may want to test it with hospitals.
I don't know whether the hospitals do, but the health plan will be able to identify that for all the other settings of care that you're receiving treatment in. So this is an opportunity to get those comorbid conditions.
Okay, I think we're ready for a vote. Yeah.
Okay, so feasibility for A, data generated during care, for B, electronic sources, for C, susceptibility to inaccuracies, unintended consequences identified, and for D, data collection can be implemented. So to what extent was the criterion feasibility met? 1, high, 2, moderate, 3, low, 4, insufficient information. To start your vote. So we have 6 for high, 9 for moderate, 2 for low, and 0 for insufficient. And Patricia, are you online? Okay.
Okay. So for that rest of us for today, right?
Yes.
And so for tomorrow.
No.
Oh, we need an overall vote.
Oh, right.
We need a summary.
I apologize.
That's all right. I take responsibility. I'm still a rookie. I'm barely, you know, still a rookie. But. Okay, so now we give an overall vote, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to review the criteria briefly for an overall vote and give a response. Oh, wait. Bruce had a question.
I'm confused about that because on scientific acceptability, we said no.
Right.
And then we did 3 and 4 on Helen's request, but why are we doing an overall vote?
I think it just still wasn't clear where the committee was really landing on this measure. I think it was so close on scientific acceptability, I just wanted to compare it between what we did for CMS and NCUA-DECL, just so you can have your discussion tomorrow. It's not binding. It's not as if you're saying you're going to recommend the measure. It's just basically, does it meet all the criteria?
So if the way I understand it, if the usability and feasibility discussion shaded over your overall vote to move it beyond our discussion of scientific acceptability, then
right.
Reflect that in that.
Although scientific acceptability is a must-pass criteria. This was so close that we thought it was worth at least finishing up the analysis.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, just reiterate that, basically if you felt it wasn't scientifically acceptable, then that should be reflected in your overall vote.
Do you see if you're going to be bidding
to receive a low score of the plan?
Sure.
In terms of overall?
Maybe it'd be easier if you got it.
Or maybe we don't need to do the overall.
Maybe we don't need the overall and we'll just deal with this one.
Okay. All right, everybody sound with that? Okay, so we're not gonna give an override.
So we'll summarize.
It was 8-0 and 8-10 and I think we're all gonna score over here on this side of the table.
Okay, so now we have another option, but I think this is the right option.
For consistency with the preliminary votes that we had for CMS, we should do the same for NCQA.
Right.
It was a clear will of the committee on the UHC measure, so that's justifying the process there. What we're doing here is going all the way through, we'll put the preliminary vote in, then we'll have the discussion about competing and or harmonizing, if that's what the committee feels, tomorrow. And do we have, even if you could just read off the goals, that might be helpful for the group. I don't know that we can pull them off, but we'll read them out.
Sure. I can read them.
I mean, she has it. Just let her read them.
We're important to this 18 yes, no, 0. For scientific acceptability, it was 8 yes, 11 no. For usability, it was 3 for high, 6 for medium, 7 for low, and 1 for insufficient. For feasibility, it was 6 for high, 9 for moderate, 2 for low, and none for insufficient.
Okay, Bella?
So, for voting on overall suitability for endorsement, does the measure meet all the HQF criteria for endorsement? And again, final assessment will depend on really the competing measures. So, 1 for yes, 2 for no. And you can start your vote. And the vote is 6 yes, 11 no.
Okay, so now we're going to... Okay, so Tarun is going to give us a little bit on tomorrow's agenda because many of us are very intrigued by the process so far and has reached some fuzzy, if that's the right word, conclusions about what's going on.
So the two measures that were evaluated all the way through the process, what we'll do is that we will actually have a discussion around the comparison. Really what we evaluate is first, actually if you can go to the next slide. This is sort of the box on how we think about related and competing and harmonization of different measures. And really if you're looking at the same target process, which this would be readmissions, hospital, and the same target populations, these measures would in theory be competing. However, based on today's discussion, if the committee feels strongly that there needs to be different measures for the health plan versus the hospital, and also, we having a discussion with both measure developers on whether the CMS measure could be rolled up to a health plan. All those types of discussions will occur tomorrow, and if you do decide that both measures are appropriate, then they will have any justification for that decision. The structure of tomorrow's discussion, we will collaborate here and try to figure out how we're going to run that, and we will give you a briefing on that tomorrow.
Any final comments?
I don't know if this is really feasible, but in my mind, and I think the fact that we're still talking about both measures tomorrow, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So both measures are still in play. And what I would find extremely helpful in terms of a person being able to make a decision comparing both measures would be if we had a little bit more information on model performance, and specifically what I would love to see from both measure developers are just calibration curves. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that would be extraordinarily helpful. Thank you.
So let's just ask measure developers, is that something that you could discuss with us in the morning, calibration curves?
We will do our best. If it's in our existing output, we probably will be able to, but we're dependent upon our programmers at the software vendors, and they may not be on the pod right now. So we'll do our best to have an answer for all of that. I think we probably have the output from something to give a calculate.
Thank you. My understanding now that we have to go to public comment before we wrap up. So
Nicole, can you open up the lines if there are any members of the public that would like to address the committee? Any members here in the public that would like to address the committee?
Okay, thank you very much for all your hard and diligent work. This was not an easy task, at least on my end of the table, and I'm sure everyone is about at the point of cognitive exhaustion. So I would welcome you back refreshed and early tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock sharp to begin our work on this competing measures kind of issue. Thank you again.
Thank you, Chair.